and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Brief. A Texas appeals court has reversed a judge's order to delay today's scheduled execution of a man who would become the first person in the U.S. to be put to death for a murder conviction tied to a diagnosis of shaken baby syndrome. The ruling by the Texas Court of Criminal Appeals was immediately appealed to the Texas Supreme Court as supporters of Robert Roberson sought to spare him from execution for his conviction in the 2002 death of his two-year-old daughter. Israel says the top Hamas leader, Yahya Sinwar, has been killed by its troops during an operation in Gaza. CBS's Margaret Brennan.
In recent weeks, as the Israeli prime minister said today, they have taken out some of the most notorious leaders of Hamas and Hezbollah, and that is dismantling Iran's terror network in the region.
President Biden is in Berlin for meetings with European leaders about Ukraine. CBS's Willie James Inman.
Earlier this week, President Biden announced a $425 million military aid package for Ukraine, with more commitments to come in the near future.
CBS News Brief, I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
James here, host of Unlabeled, your 90s mixtape, every Sunday from 8 to 9 on WFHR. It's your weekly dose of music, nostalgia, and pop culture exclusively on locally grown radio.
Civic Media News, I'm Derek Tritz. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Charges are filed against Jesse Vang and Katrina Bauer in the death of Elijah Vu. Manitowoc County District Attorney Jacqueline LaBrie made the announcement at a news conference Thursday afternoon.
Well, I will not comment further on the details of the case out of respect for the ongoing judicial process. I assure you that we remain committed to working with law enforcement to hold those responsible for his death accountable.
Elijah was the three-year-old boy from Two Rivers who went missing in February and whose body was found last month. A bail hearing for Bauer and Vang will be Friday. Vice President Kamala Harris is blitzing battleground Wisconsin with 2.5 weeks to Election Day. She campaigned in Milwaukee, La Crosse, and Green Bay Thursday. Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, and Michigan are critical to Harris's chances of winning in November. And that's what you need to know. I'm Derek Tritz, and this is Civic Media News.
Hey, everybody. Glad you could join us. I'm Tim Hubbelt, better known as the Polka Guy, on the Sunshine Polka Party Variety Show.
Join Tim every Saturday and Sunday for a great variety of polkas, waltzes, and more. Wake up at 7 a.m. on Saturday morning to get the weekend started on the right foot, then enjoy a lively Sunday afternoon at 1 p.m. Same great show, two different times, one fun weekend. The Sunshine Polka Party Variety Show, 7 a.m. Saturdays and 1 p.m. Sundays, only on WFHR, locally grown radio.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR, home for Up North News Radio.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to, lots to talk about. Been getting a lot of flack lately. As you know, I've been a card-carrying member of the Teamsters Union and CWA for, well, pretty much my entire 35-year working career. And I have come out and said, look, I think the Teamsters are making a huge mistake. I think the leadership is making an enormous mistake. I think Sean O'Brien is, I don't know what. I think there's a lot of mistakes going on. Because understand, the Republicans for a while have been trying to make inroads into organized labor. I've been trying to get them to, you know, to peel off some of the money, some of the volunteers, without actually doing anything that would help organize labor. You can't point to a vote from J.D. Vance or from Josh Hawley or from, go down the list, Marco Rubio, Ted Cruz, any of them that actually helped organize labor. Now, understand, they're talking about being working class champions and caring about working families. A lot of rhetoric. But policy-wise, you know, there's talk and then there's action. And the thing that Trump and the Republicans have done really well, a lot of talk, a lot of tweeting, a lot of social media, a lot of Fox News and their siblings, a lot of right-wing talk radio, a lot of blather, lots of words. Oh my gosh, words. And the very best words, I guess. But none of them make people's lives better. There's no policy in there. There's no action. Whereas you look at Joe Biden, what Biden has done, transformational. Moving us away from neoliberalism and bad free trade agreements, reshoring manufacturing, investing in infrastructure, you know, down the line of making lives better. And also, understand, you know, everyone's complaining, oh, you know, inflation's horrible, inflation's bad. Globally, we have done the best coming out of the pandemic. We don't know what inflation is. And understand, I still believe inflation isn't bad enough because people keep buying stuff. If inflation were too high, people wouldn't buy stuff. And corporate America would go, oh, well, if we got to get rid of this stuff, we should lower the price. See, that's how the free market works. Maybe you remember. But I'm in this moment where I've got a lot of red hats, a lot of union members who are taking this moment to say, well, you know, the Republicans have done this and done that. And you go, done what? They've said things, not done anything. And this is where kind of pointing out what Joe Biden and ultimately Kamala Harris has done and will continue to do. And understand, this administration has been phenomenal in taking on corporate power. Where I think a lot of our inflation problems come from, where a lot of our low wage problems come from, where a lot of our healthcare problems come from, where a lot of our education problems come from, where a lot of our problems come from. This deference to corporate America. We got to give them whatever they want. Deregulate, tax cuts, policies to give them land and infrastructure, whatever they want. And, oh, completely change our education system to tailor to their needs. Not to creating critical thinking, active, informed citizens. No, no. We need little go-bots who are going to show up and do low-wage work. And this administration's been taking that on. And that, I got to tell you, is a good thing. Corporate America has been really sticking it to us. So when you have the FTC, the Federal Trade Commission, the SEC, and the DOJ's antitrust division all going after monopoly power, all going after corporate collusion and price fixing, all going after the stuff that skyrockets prices but also stifles competition and squeezes the little guy out, I say, about time. You got an administration who's been out not just talking about supporting unions, but finding Obama's comfortable shoes and marching on a picket line. You know, you go down the list of the things this administration's done from you know, forcing airlines to create a passenger's bill of rights so that, you know, flying is less costly and more reliable, from you know, getting rid of junk fees and exposing that and ending non-compete clauses, which again, you know, the courts have said, no, we tend to like those. You know, peanut butter and jelly is a proprietary sandwich. To, you know, our U.S. trade representative taking on, you know, offshoring corporations, taking on big tech, taking on collusion and corporate malfeasance. It's about time. It's about time. And, you know, understand, as Attorney General, you know, Kamala Harris took on big corporations. It's going to continue. This idea that Trump is the savior, this idea that Trump cares about union members, this idea that Trump cares about working people, kind of ludicrous. And I'm still trying to figure out how it is exactly that we bid on this, because there's nothing in his past, and we've talked about this for years, there is literally nothing in the man's past that would lead you to think that he's the great champion of the working class. He's the guy who's cheated corporations out of wages so that they couldn't pay their employees when they would remodel his casinos or his buildings. There are thousands of those stories. There are the bankruptcies. There are just... the field is littered with bad practices. And every one of those hurt a working person. So this idea that somehow, you know, this billionaire, this rich guy, is going to come in and understand what it's like to live a day in my shoes, it's kind of ludicrous. I saw a funny story. Evidently, he's going to go work at a fryer at McDonald's. Don't know if it's going to actually happen. But the gimmick is, well, I worked longer and harder at a McDonald's than Kamala did. You've never worked an honest day's work in your life. You wouldn't know an honest day's labor if it jumped up and bit you in the behind. And yet, you've got millions of people who go to work every day, bust their behind, 40 hours a week, 50 hours a week, 60 hours a week, and can't make ends meet. And now, because of your Project 2025, you want to do away with overtime after 40. No, we could easily have a 160-hour work week. You just don't work the rest of the month. Where we are is literally insane. So when I see the kind of divisiveness and the failure to educate, like I'm seeing coming out of my union, at the head, I have problems. Now, I have great faith in the fact that the grassroots, the locals, the joint councils, those folks are picking up the slack and they are moving forward. They are leading where the national leadership has failed. And I'm not sure why the national leadership has failed. I'm not sure why they've chosen to do this. It could be, as I've said, anywhere from someone has convinced Sean O'Brien that he's going to be the next George Meany, the president whisperer, to, something very nefarious, which people are whispering in my ear all the time. And I'm not getting into because I don't know, but it makes you question. Makes you question why you're doing the thumbs up with a guy who, while he was president, screwed over the Teamsters Union. His NLRB screwed over this union. This Supreme Court in the Glacier decision screwed over this union and all unions. Why you would look at this guy's record and just kind of, oh, well, no big deal. Thumbs up is beyond me. But here we are. And this is a moment where members across the country are out there knocking on doors, going to parking lots, talking to people. And of course, joint councils are doing it as well, which is why when we come back, Bill Carroll, president of Teamsters Joint Council 39, he's going to be here to share some thoughts on what they're doing in Wisconsin to educate their Teamster members and union members there to get out and vote for Harris and Tim Walz. So going to take a quick break. When we come back, Bill Carroll's going to be here to share some thoughts. Back after this.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, I've been taking a lot of flack here the last several days over... and look, we've been talking a lot about my union, the Teamsters Union, and the non-endorsements, which you'll remember I called back in January that this is where we would be. But taking a lot of flack for it. And the problem is I understand. I remember a lot of stuff. And while Democrats have not always delivered on the rhetoric, You know, I've seen what Republicans have done over the years, and that's the education process. So when I saw the non-endorsement and all of the endorsements by joint councils and locals and the Teamsters National Black Caucus, I said, that's the reason I love being a Teamster, local autonomy. If the national's not going to lead, the local folks, the grassroots, the bottom up, that's how we're going to do it. And one of those joint councils, Joint Council 39 in Wisconsin, on September 18th, they voted to endorse Harris Walz. Their executive board unanimously endorsed. And I think the saying was, it was a no-brainer. And here to share some thoughts on that endorsement, I've asked Teamsters Local 344 Secretary Treasurer and Joint Council 39 President Bill Carroll to share some thoughts. Bill, thanks for taking time for us.
Happy to be here.
So let's start with the big question. Why the endorsement? If the Nationals not endorsing, why are you out on the other side?
Well, I don't necessarily think it's on the other side. There's a non-endorsement, right? So that doesn't mean there's an endorsement for Trump. But for us, the choice was clear. The choice was clear from the beginning. Me and both the executive boards for my local union and our joint council have both been on the same mindset really for a couple months. We kind of anticipated this non-endorsement coming from the IBT. So we were prepared. As soon as they made it official that they weren't going to endorse, we had already made the decision. I had already taken the vote of both executive boards prior, and we were ready to go as soon as we heard what was going to happen.
Yeah, see, I'm going to disagree with you. I think a non-endorsement in this moment, especially given the fact of how bad Trump was as president and how good Joe Biden has been for unions as president, I think a non-endorsement is a slap in the face to Biden and the Democrats for being really good these last 4 years. And I point to little things like the CMEX decision out of the NLRB. I think of the Supreme Court decision in the Glacier case. I think of the pension situation. I could spend another half an hour going through all of the things that our union has benefited from with Biden in the White House and things that we suffered under because when Trump was in the White House. Seems like, your words, a no-brainer.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, it is a slap in the face. As far as I'm concerned, President Biden has been the best president of my lifetime, and I've been around a while. So, you know, for me, I was pretty shocked that they didn't take the position that they would support President Biden and, by extension, Vice President Harris. But if they didn't, you know, and they didn't want to make the decision, we stepped in and did it.
Yeah,
and
this is what leadership
looks
like.
For us.
This is what leadership looks like, in my view. What you've done is you've stood up and you've said, we're going to go forward, the Wisconsin motto. So as you're out there talking to members, obviously this non-endorsement cannot be helpful. I know it's not been helpful to me. So how are you... How are you crossing that bridge and going back and explaining, doing the education that I think the entire movement should be doing? What are you doing?
Well, we've had a field organizing program operating since the beginning of the month. We're out in the parking lots and plant gates where our members are coming and going from to and from work. We're trying to educate them on the issues, on why it's important to vote the way that we have endorsed and we're recommending. Of course, you know, there's a significant number of people on the other side because, you know, they don't have to deal with the same issues we deal with as local union leadership on a day-to-day basis. We have to operate under the laws and decisions from the government that are handed down to us. Our members, you know, God love them. They come to work, punch in, pay dues, and they leave it there, right? I think they feel very protected by their local union. We're a strong union. We protect our members. But, you know, if the laws aren't in our favor, we got our hands tied behind our back and we're still expected to protect our members.
No, I think it was George Meany who said something back in the 60s. He said, how do you get a guy to go on strike when he's making 10 grand a year? Basically saying the union has done such a good job at enriching people's lives and giving them, you know, solid middle class existence. How do you get them to act in their interests? And this kind of plays in that same world. The unions have done such a good job of helping their members have a good standard of living that now they start thinking about other things besides their job. So the reason I bring this up, because this is a leadership kind of moment. This is an education opportunity. We should have been in the process of inoculation up until this point, because I think people forget what the Trump years were. So let me ask you, how hard was it to organize? How hard was it to negotiate contracts? How hard was it to represent public sector workers during the Trump years?
Well, I can tell you, it's not just the Trump years. It goes back to the Scott Walker years, right? In Wisconsin, our experience has been very protracted. It's been 15 years, 2011 or 2010, right on the heels of the Citizens United Supreme Court decision. Money got dumped into the system. The first thing they did was outlaw public sector bargaining in Wisconsin. That made it not difficult, impossible. The Teamsters in Wisconsin lost 11,000 members almost overnight because of that. And then right on the heels of that was right to work. You know, right on the heels of that was watering down workers' comp law and eliminating prevailing wage on state and municipal projects. So it's been one attack after another, and this is right up and down party lines. You know, the Democrats were in lockstep fighting against it. Republicans were in lockstep fighting for it. And, you know, it's decimated the Teamsters in Wisconsin, but the overall organized labor movement in Wisconsin as well. So, you know, we've lived the partisan program here, and it's no different than Trump. And as far as I'm concerned, Project 2025 is just an extension of Scott Walker's playbook.
No, I absolutely want to bring that up. I want to get to that. But, you know, the thing is you know, the general president, you know, came out on a right-wing podcast and said, you know, the Democrats are screwing them over. That's a nicer FCC-friendly word that began with F. And look, Democrats have not always been the champions I've wanted or expected. And more often than not, their rhetoric is out in front of their actions. But I got to tell you, you brought up 2011. I was sleeping on your Capitol floor, broadcasting from within Brett Halsey's office for 2 weeks in 2011. As all that was going on, I saw firsthand what Republicans did to public sector workers and to workers in Wisconsin, and came back to Pennsylvania and said, hey, get ready. This is going global. And we've seen nothing but attacks. So how do you square the two? Because, look, you know, Democrats clearly, you know, Carter didn't overturn Taft-Hartley as he said he would. Clinton didn't get strike replacement. Obama, who promised me twice we were going to get something better than the Employee Free Choice Act, none of that came to fruition. But I, again, saw what Republicans did.
Right. Yeah. I mean, and that's indisputable. And that's recent history. I mean, we can go back and argue what each political party was responsible for in the 70s and 60s and 50s, all the way back to Taft-Hartley, all the way back to the Wagner Act. You know, you can weigh all that stuff. You know, the pension issue wouldn't have been such an issue if through deregulation if they wouldn't have had a big loophole in ERISA. So there's all kinds of different. You know, nobody's blameless, but to both sides, it especially recently in the last 15 years. I just can't get myself to agree with both sides in it. The yeah. Democrats have been very helpful to organized labor, particularly in Wisconsin. Even though they haven't had the numbers, they've had fight in them all the way through.
Yeah, but you know, you bring up trucking deregulation, something that, you know, an industry I've spent my entire life working under and watching be decimated, you know, from the 80s until now, companies going bankrupt and workers losing their jobs. You can't both sides that and then claim, well, it's only one side, the Democrats, because that was the kind of bipartisanship, because I remember the vote. That was the kind of bipartisanship that Sean O'Brien went to the RNC and said he wants to see. Only 13 House members voted against that legislation. So to say it was only the Democrats, there's a problem there.
Right. Well, that's a both sides type of issue. But now look at the pension relief that we just had. There was one side and another side.
Yep.
And Vice President Harris broke that tie down party lines. You know, so the Democrats have been our friends in recent history, and there's no reason to believe that they won't be our friends moving forward.
I'm with you. So the question becomes, you know, Sean O'Brien, what have you done for me lately? And I agree with that. All the stuff has been great. The pension reform stuff, the NLRB general counsel, amazing. In fact, Sean O'Brien himself said Lina Khan should stay as FTC person. You know, all of Biden's people should be staying in place, but yet we're not endorsing them. I get, what are you going to do for me in the future? How many Republicans signed on to pass the PRO Act?
I don't believe any have.
And do you think Josh Hawley is going to come around? Do you think Marco Rubio, these are folks who claim to be pro-worker, J.D. Vance, do you think they're going to be on board?
I don't believe that that's going to happen. I think once this election cycle's over, they're going to go right back to wherever they go.
Right. So for me, the answer to this, if labor is your issue, if you've got a union job and you've got good wages, solid benefits, retirement security, especially now since the joint employer pension funds have been shored up to ensure that people are going to get what they expect in retirement, it seems logical that the people who are telling us we're going to help expand the labor movement, grow the numbers again, so more people are paying into pension funds, that kind of seems like a no-brainer, again, to use your word.
Yeah, well, that's who we support. I mean, we, you know, one of the things that our members that have been rather indignant over our endorsement, when they look at it as from more of a global lens on, and the arguments that I've heard that have been sensible, which have been few and far between, always revert back to like immigration or which bathroom you're using, something like that. When we make that endorsement decision, we look at which candidates are going to be the most favorable for organized labor and by extension, our membership, because that's our focus. That's what we work under. So that's kind of the dynamic there as far as the endorsement goes. But I can tell you, I do agree with Sean O'Brien on a couple points. The main point being that the system is messed up. The system is screwed up. What really screwed it up more than anything is the Citizens United decision in 2010. And we've been dealing with that wellspring of political problem and political bribery, if you will, since then.
No, I'm 100% right there with you. Our Supreme Court is a major problem. And again, I come back to, it kind of matters who you put in that Oval Office as who they nominate to sit on that bench. And there's the potential of maybe one or two justices being, their seats being open in the next term. Are you talking to members about the potential of an eight to one Supreme Court or a 7-2 Supreme Court and what that would look like as we move, what I argue, back to the era of the Lochner age?
Yeah, you know, we really haven't talked about that specific issue, although it is very important and it's something that we probably should bring up and talk to them about. But again, we're going to be back out on the street right after the beginning of the first of the year because we're going to have a state Supreme Court election that we have to secure, you know. But those are vital issues that we have to address. And again, what we're doing right now is just getting out, letting our members know who we support. We get a little bit of pushback because, you know, obviously an organization our side is going to have some people that don't see it our way. But normally what we do is we circle that argument right back down to the easy question, which candidate is better for labor? It's super easy to answer.
So give me the 30-second elevator pitch because that's all you get in the parking lot. Kind of the last line of questioning I've got for you here because ultimately it's going to come down to, you know, what message is getting through to them and which messages you think are resonating. So what do you think it is and give it to me?
Well, again, the message is, look, we're out here in support of organized labor, your union. This is your shield. This is the firewall that you get to enjoy as a union member. And if we have candidates that want to erode our power, that's going to translate to you guys at some point in time. So we make our decision based on what's best for organized labor. It's very clear. Once again, it's a no-brainer. That's really the pitch to our people that, look, you want to enjoy what you have right now. You got to think long and hard about the candidate that supports your union and by extension you and your coworkers.
And I got to imagine that everyone on their phone, every one of your people on the streets have on their phone, you know, Donald Trump and Elon Musk waxing poetic about firing striking workers.
Oh, yeah, that all came down the chute, too, you know, and it's rather alarming, especially when they're chuckling about it and they think it's funny that people that are fighting for a better life for themselves and their fellow coworkers, that they get to cut them and fire them. I think it's rather pathetic, and it's really strange that they would take that approach.
Yeah, and as I said, look, I thought the International, the second that came out, O'Brien came out with a nice, strong statement, but the statement should have said, sorry, Donald, you just screwed yourself. We're endorsing Harris. That should have been in my view. But again, I'm not the Teamsters president. They'll decide that in 26 again. But Bill, I appreciate you taking some time for us. Keep up the great work. Get out there, knock on those doors, get in those parking lots, and let's see what happens in November.
Okay, thanks, Rick. Thanks for putting me on today.
Anytime. Appreciate the time. Bill Carroll, president of the Teamsters Joint Council 39 out there in Wisconsin. Want to hear your thoughts. Is there two sides? Do Republicans not despise organized labor? Is their record just, well, not a big deal? I want to hear your thoughts. Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Right back after this. Stick around.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR. This is your hometown radio, refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly clear, a low close to 40 tonight. More sunshine tomorrow and warmer, a little breezy as well. High near 70. Slight shower chance tomorrow night. Weekend, mix of sun and clouds, 70s continue. Temps stay above average to start next week. Right now it's 53.
Bringing a house of pain.
Backside pressure, down he goes. Inside the 30-yard line.
To a game day near you.
Picked off by Wisconsin, and the Badgers win it.
That's how you create a program. That's how you create a team.
Join us Saturday. The Badgers are back on the road to face Northwestern. Our coverage begins at 9 a.m. on your home for Wisconsin football.
Here on 97.5 FM, 1320 AM, WFHR.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So as we were talking about with Bill Carroll, president of Joint Council 39 of the Teamsters there in Wisconsin, you know, it's one thing to hear the Democrats' rhetoric. You know, we're going to get things done. We're 100% behind these pro-worker policies. We're going to get paid family medical leave. We're going to have strike replacement. We're going to undo Taft-Hartley. We're going to pass the employee free choice. All of these promises made by politicians. And understand, the political realities are much different than the campaign rhetoric. And you could say, well, the rhetoric hasn't met their actions, so they haven't lived up to their promises, which is completely fair. But there's the other side. As I spoke with Bill Carroll, I was sleeping in Wisconsin's Capitol in 2011 as Republicans were stealing labor rights from working people. In 2012, I was in Michigan when they passed right to work. These are Republicans doing things. So words one thing, doing completely another. And here to share some thoughts on where we are with the House of Labor and this election, I've asked my good friend Stephen Greenhouse to come share some thoughts. One of my favorite labor reporters in the country, former New York Times reporter, author of many books on the state of labor. The most recent one being Beaten Down, Worked Up, The Past, Present, and Future of American Labor. He's got a new piece out on U.S. labor stepping up their efforts to get, well, make the case that Trump ain't the guy. Stephen, thanks for taking time for us.
Good to be here, Rick. Always good to be here. Just following up on what you just said, you know, I know that many union members, many workers are frustrated when a Democrat says, I'm going to raise the minimum wage, or I'm going to pass the Employee Free Choice Act to make it easier to unionize, or I'm going to, you know, get the Protecting the Right to Organize Act. And like the Democrats really want to get this done, and they often can't because Republicans block it, because you need 60 votes in the Senate and they only have 50 control of 51 votes. So I think it's it gets me upset and frustrated when good, smart, working people say, oh, it's the Democrats' fault it didn't pass. The Democrats are saying, give us a filibuster-proof majority in the Senate, and we'll pass a higher minimum wage. We'll pass paid family leave. We'll pass the Employee Free Choice Act, or the Protecting the Right to Organize Act, to make it easier to unionize. And politicians make promises kind of saying, if I controlled Congress, I would deliver on this. And they don't say, I support, paid family leave, but only if I somehow get a filibuster-proof majority. But like, they're kind of laying out what they stand for. And that the Republicans aren't saying they support the Protecting the Right to Organize Act, because they want to weaken unions. And so it's important that, the Democrats say, I want a higher minimum wage. The Republicans oppose a higher minimum wage. The Democrats, want, people to get 12 weeks paid, family leave. And the Republicans are against that. The Democrats want laws that will make it easier to unionize. The Republicans are against that. So they don't always deliver, but it's like not their fault.
No, I'm perfectly in agreement with you, and I understand this. Yeah. But it's also the fact that we don't see enough of a pushback. I mean, perfect example, when Bill Clinton pushed for strike replacement, which is the only reason I voted for him in 92, we were going to get a strike replacement bill. It's going to help us organize and get better contracts and all of that stuff. And it got filibustered by Bob Dole. It died. It never came back up again. Whereas, there are some, people would say that should have been something that just kept coming up and kept banging it out, as Republicans would do, because this is one of those things that I give Republicans credit for. They're willing to fight losing fights just for the message. They don't care if government works or not, but it's that message that they're willing to fight for, and the feeling that they're fighting for something. And I think, especially, people who aren't political, ideological on either side, are saying, I just don't see enough of a fight.
I totally agree with you, Rick. I mean, I think every month the Democrats should be pushing to pass for a higher minimum wage, raise it to what, $13, $15, $70, to show we care about all these struggling Americans who aren't making enough money. And like, they try once and they give up. And I think it's important to they should be pushing every month or two for paid family medical leave, which would be such a boon for, such a great thing for so many Americans.
Yeah.
And I think they feel, well, when we lose on it, it's embarrassing, so we don't want to push on it again because we'll look bad. And, you're right, the Republicans sort of fight harder, and the Democrats have to learn to fight harder.
Yeah, I've always said that, in a street fight, Democrats will offer to hold your coat. Until recently, I look at someone like Tim Walz. I love me some Tim Walz, because there's a guy who you hand him his coat, he's going to wrap it around your head and beat you with it.
I mean, Harris did great in the debate against Trump. She really stepped on his head. I mean, it was really, the little lady was very impressive. I mean, she was and she was fearless.
Yeah.
I mean, she took him on and took him down. That was impressive, I thought.
No, I at the end of the day, I've got no problem voting for her. I think she's going to be a good president. I think she's going to keep a lot of the same people that I love from the Biden administration and a lot of the same policies. I'm all on board, which is why you got to get the message out, which is why I think it's so dangerous. And look, I've been a Teamster for the majority of my working life, some 35 years now. And I look at my international president, Sean O'Brien, which I've been talking an awful lot about. You've got a piece out here just the other day about his temper tantrum against Democrats. Why do you think it's lazy history what O'Brien has come out and said, which is that the Democrats have been effing him and labor for years?
Thanks for asking that, Rick. So, the other day, a friend texted me this quote from Sean O'Brien, where he said, for 40 years, we've been effed by the Democrats. I said, wait a second. The Democrats have pushed consistently for a higher minimum wage. They're always the ones who push for higher minimum wage. They pushed for the Protecting the Right to Organize Act. Joe Biden delivered what was, for years, the Teamsters' number one legislative priority. The Teamsters pushed so hard for it, and Trump did absolutely nothing, zilch, to advance the Teamsters' number one legislative priority. And Joe Biden delivered $86 billion to protect the pensions of hundreds of thousands of Teamsters. The Teamsters were going to have much smaller pensions, get 50 cents, 25 cents on the dollar, what they had promised. And Joe Biden and Kamala Harris cast the decisive vote to make it happen. So And to say that the Democrats have effed us over for 40 years when they really moved heaven and earth to deliver your number one priority, what is Sean O'Brien thinking? You know, and it's like he suffers from amnesia. I think he's just very upset with the Democrats because the Republicans invited him to speak at the Republican convention, and that was very good. You know, made him feel very proud, and he's really angry at the Democrats for not doing him a big favor, indulging him, giving him a wonderful platform and putting him in spotlights. And like, you know, as I write in this piece, it might be good for Sean O'Brien personally if Trump wins, because Trump will say, well, you know, by not endorsing Kamala Harris, the Teamsters really helped me. But, you know, the 1.3 million Teamsters, the nation's 15 million union members, are really going to be hurt if Donald Trump wins, because Trump was a very anti-union president. People forget that.
Yeah.
You know, he appointed, you know, official after official to the National Labor Relations Board, who in decision after decision and move after move sought to weaken labor unions, make it harder for unions to win elections. And when Trump holds himself out as a friend of workers, a champion of workers, it's like, you know, it's like such, so dishonest. You know, he did nothing to raise the minimum wage. He rolled back safety standards for coal miners and other workers. He rolled back overtime protections for workers. As a result of Trump, fewer people can qualify for overtime. You know, he insulted, you know, all these labor leaders, Richard Trumka, the head of the AFL-CIO. He said that unionized auto factories in Michigan should move to the South to get lower wages so they can become more competitive. You know, just the other day with his buddy, gazillionaire buddy Elon Musk, he said it's a great idea to fire workers when they are on strike, and he chuckled about that. I mean, you know, to think that this guy's a friend of workers, I mean, like, what? I mean, it just, you know, Trump is, you know, consistently anti-worker and anti-union, It just puzzles me seriously that people think he's good for workers.
Yeah.
Yes, he's shouting, oh, I'm going to impose these huge tariffs, these huge taxes on imports. That sounds good. That's a good soundbite. But, you know, that's going to cause a humongous trade war, you know, with China and Europe and the whole world. And it's going to be crazy, and it might cause a worldwide recession. And, you know, I'm not just saying this. Nobel Prize winning economists, you know, very smart people are saying this. And that could be a disaster. It could cause massive layoffs for Americans. That could cause a huge recession. Plus, you know, Trump talks about Kamala's to blame for inflation, which is ridiculous. You know, she's the vice president who has very little power. And to blame her for inflation is like blaming her for the flat tire when you were driving the other day. She has nothing to do with the inflation.
Yeah, but here's the thing, Stephen.
You know, if you put 20% tariffs on everything, you're going to cause huge inflation and hurt every household.
I'm not opposed to tariffs if they're done in a strategic way that's going to protect American interests. But broad sweeping, you know, it's the only tool in the box. That's problematic. But there are tariffs that we have to have in place to protect industries of national security, steel, our productive capacities. Yeah. And we have to reshore some manufacturing.
Yeah. So 2 hours ago, I was on the phone, Rick, with the president of the United Steelworkers, Dave McCall. And he was saying, yes, agreeing totally with you, Rick. We need some tariffs when people are, you know, when China is illegally subsidizing certain products, when it's violating international laws, we need tariffs to protect ourselves. But Dave McCall, head of the steelworkers, right, says, you know, we don't want tariffs on everything. That's going to screw up our economy, the world economy, cause trade problems. So yes, you're totally right, Rick. We need targeted tariffs on certain things. When China breaks trade laws, when China unfairly subsidizes, you know, solar panels, for instance, I mean, or subsidizing car production
or shipbuilding or anything,
car production,
yeah, absolutely. And you know, I didn't want to go in this direction, but you know, I just wanted to make sure that you know, because I've been saying I'm in favor of tariffs if we use them strategically, and this is why having people who believe in government, understand government, and want smart policy are important. And I don't think Trump's that guy. But I go back to the question that you ask, you pose in your piece about O'Brien's temper tantrum, because you know, if O'Brien gets what it appears he wants, which is a Trump victory. I've said best case scenario, he thinks someone's convinced him he's going to be George Meany of this generation. He's going to be the labor whisperer for Trump, which I'm not sure how that's going to work out. But there's, you know, some other ones down the road where you start questioning. You know, again, as you pointed out, it could be good for him, but not for the union, because if you've been paying attention, the Teamsters have been spending a lot of effort organizing Amazon drivers, which only can be done because Biden reinstated the joint employer rule. When Trump comes back into office, if he wins, I gotta assume he will do as he did the last time and overturn that decision, which quashes all of that organizing.
That's a great point, Rick, and I was meaning to make it, but you beat me to the punch because you're so smart. But you're right. I mean, so one of the crazy things about Sean O'Brien when he says the Democrats have effed us, Biden's appointees to the National Labor Relations Board, are moving right now to make it far easier to unionize Amazon truck drivers. And that's like the number one organizing goal right now. The number one campaign of the Teamsters right now is to organize Amazon drivers. And without the help of Biden's NLRB, they wouldn't get to first base. So Biden's appointed many pro-worker, pro-labor people to the NLRB, and they're doing, exactly what the Teamsters need to win big time at Amazon. And, by saying Amazon is a joint employer with all these contract, Amazon has set up all these contractors that drive trucks saying Amazon, with all these drivers and delivery people wearing uniforms saying Amazon. And Amazon says, oh, they're a different company. We have nothing to do with that. And the NLRB is calling them out, calling out their bull and saying, you're joint employers. You pull the strings on them. And that, and saying that the joint employers makes it infinitely easier to unionize them. And you're totally right, Rick. If Trump wins, he's going to appoint people who in a nanosecond, in 3.5 seconds, are going to say, no, they're not joint employers. And it's going to make it much harder for the Teamsters to win there. And so it's just crazy for O'Brien to say, it's the Democrats who have effed us up, when it's the Republicans who oppose all this pro-labor legislation, oppose a higher minimum wage, Donald Trump supports a national right to work law, which if it is enacted, will greatly weaken, the Teamsters Union, the Steelworkers Union, the Oil Workers Union. Yeah. It's like Trump is seriously anti-union and he talks a good ball game, but he's very anti-worker. And I think people should really, what did Trump just say the other day? He said the work that auto workers do is child work. Children could do it. That at the Mercedes-Benz plant, he said, oh, the work is so easy.
It's just assembly work.
What an insult to people who bust their backs and sometimes risk their lives doing serious work.
I mean, again, another guy who's never done an honest day's labor, which again brings me back to this question. Then what is it that you think Sean O'Brien's getting out of this? I've heard, like I said, the most generous I can be is that he really believes wholeheartedly that he can sway Donald Trump. He seemed to believe that he was able to sway Josh Hawley away from Right to Work. He seemed to believe that he was able to move J.D. Vance on some issues. He seems to have this self-image or this self-confidence or self-esteem that he's the great negotiator and he's gonna move people. That's the most gracious. What do you think it can be?
I've been critical of Sean O'Brien. I think in the UPS contract, he did a great job, and we should give him credit for that. I mean, he really mobilized the troops to threaten a strike, and he really had people mobilized, and they got a great contract. Or maybe you just – and then, he's done some very good things.
I agree.
When he's kissing up to Trump like this, it's like, I wonder, what is his game? It's not at all clear what his game is. It's clear that if Trump wins, that's going to be very bad for the nation's 1.3 million Teamsters and other workers. But I think there are two things that are causing O'Brien to kiss up to Trump. One, I think he's a sizable ego, and he was upset that he wasn't invited to speak at the Democratic convention. And I think he's also upset that he's gotten so much criticism from the Democrats because he spoke at the Republican convention. He's often complimented Trump. He's complimented Josh Hawley, who has a 0% pro Labor voting record in Congress. And so I think one thing is just his, you know, his feelings have been hurt by the Democrats because they...
His ego is bruised. Got it.
And the second thing is, as you were saying, Rick, I think he wants to be Trump's labor guy that, you know, all these other big unions have endorsed Harris, but he's the one big union that hasn't and kind of has quietly or not so quietly remained in Trump's camp. So if Trump wins, O'Brien will feel I'm the kingmaker. I could call in my debt somehow with Donald Trump. But, you know, anyone who's worked for Trump will say, you know, he often turns on you and stomps on your head and fires you and insults you and says you're an idiot and maybe says you should be prosecuted. So, you know.
Yeah. There's a long line of those people.
O'Brien, you know, he called for executing the former head of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. It's like, whoa, you know.
No, but here's where my thought was, you know, the second that that tape came out of Trump and Musk waxing poetic about firing striking workers, that should have been the moment that Sean O'Brien came out and said, bridge too far. This is the red line. This is the line in the sand. This is no can do. We are now endorsing Harris because you've committed the cardinal sin, the right to strike. That is, you know, that's the lowest level you can get. If you cross that line, it's over.
Yeah. And I think, you know, Sean O'Brien, you know, wants to be a good, strong, tough leader. So I think he kind of, you know, he saw that there was a poll that showed a majority of Teamsters back Trump over Harris. So I think he didn't want to, he became a follower.
Yeah.
He
not a leader.
And said, I can't defy what the members want. But, you know, a lot of Americans support Trump, even though Trump, you know, will be bad for them, you know, on a lot of economic things on low, you know, not, you know, Trump is not into raising workers' wages. It's not something he's really into. You've never heard him really talk about that. And so, you know, people have to realize that Trump is, you know, is not a pro-worker guy and they shouldn't, he's a very effective speaker. He's kind of a Pied Piper, but you know, I'm sorry to say, I don't think he's going to help the nation's workers. I don't think he's going to help the nation's unions. And Sean O'Brien, you know, as a leader of one of the nation's most important unions, should say, you know, I as a leader, I'm going to urge my members, explain to my members that this guy is not good for us, and he's going to rally the union's executive board to say, you know, we're going to endorse Harris because, you know, she's not perfect. You know, we might have a few problems with her, but she will be better for the nation's workers and the nation's unions. She supports all these pro-worker things that Trump won't begin to support.
She was the deciding vote on whether the multi-employer pension fund got saved. That's all I needed to know in that moment. Whereas we lived through the Trump years, and it's good to have historic amnesia. It's good to be historically lazy, but the reality is what it is. We lived through 4 years of Donald Trump. I know what four more will be. Stephen, as always, great work over at the American Prospect at the Garden. Keep it up. Look forward to having you back again real soon.
Thank you, Rick.
Okay. Our good friend Stephen Greenhouse. Make sure you check out his work, the American Prospect and the Guardian. We'll get links out on social media. You can take a look at his great work. I want to hear your thoughts. Do you think this is going to swing the election? I've got friends who think this non-endorsement could put Trump over the top. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Right back. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1987. That was the day that more than 100,000 people gathered in Paris to stand up against poverty and hunger. The gathering was inspired by Father Joseph Racinski, a French Catholic priest. He founded the All Together in Dignity Fourth World Movement, dedicated to addressing poverty. That day unveiled a commemorative stone to honor the victims of extremism.
extreme poverty. The stone bears an image of two people, arms outstretched, releasing a bird into the sky. The stone's inscription read, "On this day, defenders of human and civil rights from every continent gathered here. They paid homage to the victims of hunger, ignorance, and violence. They affirmed their conviction that human misery is not inevitable. They pledged their solidarity with all people who, throughout the world, strive to end extreme poverty." The site they chose to place the stone was significant. The Trocadero Plaza in Paris is where the Universal Declaration of Human Rights was proclaimed by the United Nations in 1948. The Universal Declaration of Human Rights affirmed the basic rights of all people, including the right to form and to join trade unions, and the right to equal pay for equal work. Placing the commemorative stone at this important spot was a continuation of this legacy. In the years since then, on this very day, other cities around the world have commemorated replicas of the stone. Nearly 20 cities in France have dedicated stones. Cities in Canada, Mexico, Switzerland, Belgium, Ireland, Scotland, Great Britain, Italy, Poland, Portugal, and the Philippines have all placed these tributes. In 1992, the United Nations declared today, October 17th, the annual International Day for the Eradication of Poverty.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
You know, to clarify something Stephen Greenhouse said, you know, recently Trump was talking about the Mercedes-Benz workers in South Carolina. And, you know, he said that the Germans, you know, they build everything in Germany. And they assemble it here. And he's not wrong. Look, he's not wrong in the fact that they make all the parts, they do all the engineering, they do all the way things go together, they design the lines, they do all, and they just assemble it here. And that's so they can, you know, claim that it's, hey, it's made in the U.S. We got U.S. labor in this. Makes them a little less foreign, if you will. Saves on shipping costs, saves on tariff costs, saves on a lot of stuff. But he goes on to say that they don't build cars. They take them out of a box and they assemble them. Could have our children do it. And you go, no. Clearly, you've never worked on an assembly line. You know nothing about the history of assembly lines. And this is one of those moments where someone who doesn't know could easily be swayed. Go, yeah, all they do is, it's like they're putting together models. Yeah, that's what we do in all of the auto plants. It's hard work. The line keeps moving. You got to keep up. There's no time to go run to the bathroom, take a break. You work. And as you remember, we talked to a lot of auto workers back when they were on strike. And, you know, productivity and production and all of that stuff was part of the discussion. You know, they're not robots. They're not machines. They're human beings. And I find it interesting that Trump goes, mere children could do it. It's frightening. And so I look at where we are in this moment. And the reason I have focused so much on my union, and I know a lot of people have sent me emails going, don't really care what Sean O'Brien says and does. I do. Because understand, you know, the Democrats' path to victory comes in Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Michigan. Three states that have still, to this day, pretty sizable Teamster memberships. And that if you don't have that membership mobilized and moving in a direction of, hey, our jobs matter, you know, or just go vote your conscience. We're not going to try and educate and inoculate. We're just going to leave you up to your own devices. That's bad. Because it gives this kind of tacit endorsement. It's what I've said from the beginning. The fact that Sean O'Brien went to the RNC and gave that glowing speech for Donald Trump and did say some good pro-union stuff. Nobody remembers that. They remember he was there. Understand what conventions are. They're events, they're political theater to get the candidate elected. They're not ego-driven TED Talks. And somehow someone convinced, I think, Sean O'Brien that, you know, he could do both. He could be the first person in the history of conventions to go to both. It really is an ego trip when you feel entitled to that. Now, there were Teamsters at the Democratic Convention. I was there. There were Teamsters on stage.
it was the most pro-labor convention I've ever seen, because the word union was on everybody's mouth. It was coming out of their mouth. It was the direction that they wanted to move forward. And they understood that if we're going to reunite this country, if we're going to revive this country, if we're going to re-energize this country, it's going to be through organizing and better wages, hours, conditions, opportunities. That's the reality. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Any questions, comments, something in your mind? I want to know. Going to take a quick break. Right back at... Thanks so much for tuning in. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. At Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com.
This is locally grown radio.
WFHR 1320 AM. W248DE Wisconsin Rapids.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.